The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I've got Rich Possum back here with me to talk about what's going on in the world. Rich is got one hell of a podcast, man. I'll tell you what, if you guys haven't started listening to Rich's podcast, you need to check it out. He's got a lot of great information on there. He's got some free stuff. He's got some paid stuff too, but by all means, it's well worth listening to. Rich, talk a little bit about your podcast and where people can find that.
Okay, the podcast looks at grains, crude oil, gold, the economy, a little bit of climate stuff if we're looking for like a crop problem, and then the stock market. But the number one markets are really the grains and the stock market. But I do really enjoy talking about the economy because it's so important, anything, everything. And then I like to throw in bonds and interest rates because that's tied in as well. I have morning briefs, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They're just done normally audio, even on my phone app or if I'm traveling or something, and try to keep as short as possible and just put a few plugs in there. Tuesday is a video for at least the grains and stock market, and it may take a little longer. And then Thursday is a weekly update where there's one for the grains and one for the stock market, and that can take longer. And then I do a monthly update strictly on the stock market on long term. Now, my analysis ranges from looking at patterns literally minutes and build it all the way into years so I can talk short term, super long term, something that was in between. And that's most of my customers here, followers, subscribers. There are a wide variety of how they want to use it. What do they need it for? But it's based a lot on business cycle patterns. And I'm a firm believer the stock market or the economy grows for about 7 to 12 years. And then we have a recession. And it's just worked decade after decade. And you might think, well, how come nobody does? How come everybody doesn't do this? Because it's 7 to 12 years. It's tricky to find that top. And I have developed over the years a clock-like model that helps do a better job than most people with that. And this is so important that during a decade, the stock market can go up 104%, and then the bear market related to the recession will be down 20 to 50%. So I actually have a signal like that. I call it my decade buy sell signal. I even invest that way somewhat. Most of my investments, I like to move in and out during the year and try to keep up with that long term. But that there's actually a pattern that in the grain markets, believe it or not, all the way back to your eight, when once a decade, you can get 80 or 100% to 400% up moves, believe it or not. There was two decades when one was 50, one was 80. And then you got to look out that you can bring those grains all the way back down again. We get right back to great crops. And yes, most of that upside performance, when you're looking at 100 to 400, normally you would say it always takes a crop problem. But in 2008, we learned that wasn't so. It was basically pure demand and then over speculation on demand that was linked to China because they didn't know how to deal with China coming on board so fast on the global economy. So that was a neat new thing, but it didn't disrupt or destroy the model. The model said, well, we're supposed to be up. So, and we were. So anyways, that's what I have. And they can go to, everybody can go to criticalpointpod.com. That's my home site, free stuff and education. There's links there to get over to the site for the videos, audios. But if you want to go straight to the video audios, it's Critical Point. Look at those two sites and then they can always, message, ping me or whatever at Twitter, rich_possum.
Well, but so far it feels like we're kind of starting to establish somewhat of a base here a little bit in the overall economy. So I guess talk about that job market a little bit and how you think that affects or what that shows, I guess, for the current economy.
Yeah, so the jobs report came out today, 200 non-farm jobs. That was a better number than most expected. Some people were thinking it might look good on the surface, but what was really going on is adjusting from the January that was much higher. So they kind of made a mistake thinking the adjustment ought to favor a little lower. Instead, they found out, no, we actually did add some more jobs. So this was a great thing. The stock market jumped immediately, and then it hit some of my targets and has since backed off a little bit, and that's okay. I think it's just profit-taking at the end of the week here. But as you break down the jobs, we actually had two private jobs. We had about 52,000 government jobs. So it's a good thing to have that many private jobs. And then we actually had 19. Now I can't read my own notes here. For goods in terms of businesses that are manufacturing kind of things, 19,000. Then we had the services industry, 200 jobs. Now, that's fantastic, and we are more of a services industry or country than manufacturing, even though we're rebuilding manufacturing pretty quickly right now. But the thing is, the services are unlikely to create inflation as much as if manufacturing and everything in the store went up. So some people are saying this is good growth, actually. It's not all that inflationary, and even if you don't believe in those internal statistics, then just look at what's going on in inflation, and it's still trending lower by the private sources. Some people are down 1.3% inflation right now. The government's not, okay? But at any rate, that was a really nice jobs report. It really shows this economy is humming along as about as good as you can get. And I showed my subscribers last week a chart of using PMIs as a clue of GDP, and I said, my model has come up and I have these numbers. It puts it out like binary computer code. It said 11100. And what that really means is you're in a sweet spot for this economy. It's time to rock and roll, pushing this economy higher this year. And then I see this jobs report today and I thought, oh, thank you. That's really right. Okay. It's the model's happy dappy. So, and therefore I am. So, I really like where we're going with this. I don't think anything's going to get in our way of having a really good economy this year. And I think the economy moves forward into 2026. I do think there'll be some hiccups, maybe towards the end of this year, but I'm targeting more early next year. But I think really the thing to remain focused on is higher into 2026. And I went back and my favorite stock index is the S&P 500. And I said, you know, I'm not a stock picker, so I don't try to figure out where all these companies are going and then add them to the index. I just look at what other people are saying. Then I look at the actual index of whatever's the true numbers coming out. And so I said, I'm going to break that down. And I went to look at what those 500 companies are doing for sales. And some of them I've been able to find all the way back to 19. It looks good. They're going to make more money this year and probably into 2026. They're going to see good sales, good earnings. And this points to a higher stock market. But you then reverse that modeling and saying, okay, so where's this coming from? Well, it means a growing economy. So the businesses can do it on their own. They're helping the economy, but the economy, it's a feedback loop. The rest of the economy is helping those. And so it's the, you know, the same old story of business consumer helping one another move in one direction or the other. And for the moment, that direction is optimistic. So that's where we're on the jobs report. And I don't know if you want to move right into the inflation since I
That's a good indicator of what's going on with the inflation thing. So let's talk about a couple things here too. So, and we're going to talk about some stuff that Chairman Powell talked about a little bit ago. But from the inflationary standpoint, I guess, Rich, as you're looking at this, some reports came out that may have been a little bit hotter than what you might have anticipated. The CPI report came out. We talked about that last month when you were on. And then the PCE report, which is kind of a subset of the CPI report, came out 2 weeks ago, roughly. Mm-hmm. And that one might have, then there were some signals there that the market might have been a little bit hotter than what the Fed likes. So I guess talk about that a little bit and your and how that wraps into inflation.
Okay. So yeah, the CPI report, that normally comes out in the middle of the month and it's for the prior month. And then the PCE inflation normally comes out at the end of the month. And again, it's for the prior month. So we got the January, actually, inflation report coming in towards the end of February for PCE, and it pretty much confirmed what we got in mid-month for CPI for January. And it was saying that inflation picked up in certain sectors, other sectors were coming down, but it was a bit, some people called it hot. My work, it wasn't, but you can see we're slowing that pace of decline, and yet the PCE headline, that means throw everything into the kettle, was 2.4% as of January. So we're starting to knock on the door of getting to the Fed's 2% inflation. But then when you strip away energy and some of the food products that can be quite volatile, pull that out of that, you get to what's called core inflation. So this would be, you know, what are your clothes costing you, your car and this and that. And it did show that was hanging up around 2.9%. The CPI, I think, was 3 or something.
Sounds right.
Might have been 3.1, but it's, you know, that was the thing that's hanging up a little bit and concerning people. So they thought, well, how's the Fed going to react to that? And basically the Fed started making comments that, well, we don't have to lower these interest rates at any fast pace. And it upset the market a little bit because they were hopeful for March and then maybe May. And now everybody's back to where they started from 6 months ago, saying it'll probably be June. And I'm in agreement. I'm pretty much stuck with May, June. And yeah, I like June. But the interesting thing is Powell's comments yesterday, some people thought it was even dovish. I didn't quite get that, but they claim that's why they thought it was the most dovish talk that he said in 6 months. I don't know if I agree with that, but hey, the market perked up. The market liked it. I think basically he was implying this economy is doing so well with these jobs and decent pay. That's some of my other statistics. So hold on. I want to hate to mess up things here, but we actually had hourly, the hours worked went up and then the wages were up 0.1%. Now those are monthly changes and that's decent. It still shows the trend is up, but most people are starting to talk like the companies are now paying high enough. So that's probably going to stop. And some even think it's already starting to roll back. And so we ought to consider that the Fed's going to get less concerned. Yesterday, they kind of talked differently than what they talked back at that PCE report. They basically were saying, we're just about there. I think he actually said those words. We're just about there. So I can't tell for sure when they're actually going to lower. But I think everybody's guessing about right of June, okay? But I think they're doing the right thing of warning us they don't have to lower rates because the economy's doing so good. And normally you would want them to have rates this high when it's doing that good to help make sure we don't go too hot and too hot in inflation and blow something up. But also that when we have a recession, and it always is when, not if. And normally, according to my work, it's once a decade, and you can actually have more than one during a decade. But there's one primary that my guess is until the end of this decade, and I think that's a very educated guess. I'm very confident of it. But and you, the point is, when you head into recession, it would be nice to have the Fed already up with interest rates so they can lower the interest rates, print a little money, and it helps put the brakes on so the recession doesn't turn into a blowout depression, which is what happened in 2008. And we were on that way in 2020. Of course, that was we generated ourselves because we had the lockdown. But so, you know, it's nice just to see this size of a cushion for a change, because I can remember in prior years, prior decades, people complaining the Fed, they raised them, but they're not high enough. They don't have the cushion. They got a nice cushion right now. So I wouldn't be surprised some people the Fed are saying, I wonder how we won't upset people if we really don't lower these rates for the rest of this decade, because they like that cushion. And then look for how many years people beat up on the Fed saying, you know, these low interest rates are ridiculous and you can't get a decent return in your savings account. And so you're forced to go into the stock market and take on more risk to make money for yourself. Whereas in 1950s, 1960s, the average American, half their money was in the savings account and the other half was in the stock market. And they had a nice little blend. They had safety. They didn't worry so much about the stock market day in, day out. You know, hey, oh, it dropped 100 points. Who cares? You know? And today you drop it 100 points. Oh my gosh, this is the end of the world. Right. And yeah. It's just because 90% of their retirement is into that thing. So yeah. Their accounts get hit more than granddad's account got hit. And so, you know, if I was in the Fed, I'd be saying, this is kind of a sweet spot. This feels kind of good because people can't complain about us anymore. So moving forward, I still think, as we've talked here in months now, I still think we'll see the interest rates work lower into next year and maybe even a year beyond that. But I also believe towards the end of the decade, we'll see another uptick in just interest rates. And I don't think it'll be much personally. But I must say, the way my model is working, my model doesn't seem to care if we left interest rates right here for the rest of this decade. And it doesn't care if inflation doesn't stay at 2% or lower like the Fed wants. It's fine with 3% and lower instead of 2% and lower. And for the rest of this decade, and it still kicks out, this economy is going to grow, two thumbs up, and the stock market's going higher. And I like that because it provides me a little bit of a cushion here, whereas other people might complain, those are too wide of numbers, you know, something could go wrong. But it looks pretty good. I'm really confident of it here. And so we'll move forward with that. And I think maybe the Fed has kind of changed its mind here in just the last few days or last week here. They're not so – the way they were talking after that PCE report is like – so – and now I think they're thinking, yes, we will get there, but we're going to do it at our own pace, and there's no rush on it. And they're absolutely right. There's no rush on it. The economy is doing well enough. And, yep. And at least inflation isn't soaring on us, you know. And somebody asked me the other day, if I was running the Fed, when would I raise interest rates again off a high inflation? And you'd have to knock inflation back to 5.5%. And here we are at 3 or less. And if I see 5.5, not only would I raise it, but it would be just like they did in, you know, last year. Here's a bang, bang, bang. I'd hit it hard to try to help out. But in the meantime, I'd rather give some room here. And let this inflation fluctuate around, let the free market economic system take care of it itself. And because I do believe the free market system, even though I'm thinking it's getting out of date the way we run it, and I'm worried about that, at the same time, I think this slide back in inflation wasn't entirely by the Federal Reserve. It helped. It changed some attitude and some people in business. But I think you and I helped to do that. And so give it some room. And I think you and I will, I don't know if we'll do it to perfection by no means, but I think we can manage this and handle it for a while here. Especially if we can keep the companies who are causing the greed inflation charging more money just because inflation's up. And you can see the pressure's building on. That's what Biden spoke last night. He's copying some of those ideas. That doesn't mean he'll get them done this year because it's election year. but the point is, I think the American people are in a mood to say, okay. It's okay to slap some of these companies around if they're making a whole lot of money off of nothing more than raising their price when they were already making money before. The American understands, hey, if the company truly is spent, you know, if their costs are going so high, they're going to start losing money. Obviously, they need to pass it on and raise their price. But when they're paying higher costs, but they're making boatloads of money, and then they raise their cost, their price anyways to make even more boatloads of money, that's not fair to you and I at the store. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So I got a question. So you've talked about this a couple times now where keeping the inflation rate where it's at, or the inflation rate, the interest rate's up where we're at now to avoid, if we do get to a recession, then there's that cushion there. Explain that, because I don't quite understand what that means.
Okay. So let's imagine we're starting to fall into recession. Economic data is breaking. Now, the Fed is notoriously slow at this. They don't want to be a timer. They don't want to be a genius because they're scared they'll flip-flop too many times and people beat them up for it. Whereas somebody like myself in the market, I don't have a problem. Hey, I don't like this. I'm dumping it tomorrow. Oh, wait a minute. I like it. I'm going to buy it. Well, the Fed can't really move that fast. So they're kind of stuck. It's a tough, tough job. So they have to wait for a lot of proof to do something. So what will happen is the economy will start coming down. They'll see the data building, and eventually they will hit a level where they'll say, you know what? The next step is a recession. It's on its way. And that's where they'll be a little on the early side, but quite often they wait until, bing, guess what? We are in a recession. We're losing jobs. People are miserable. And then what the Fed does is it drops its interest rate to make it a cheaper cost and more to just help make sure the bank's in business so that you can keep that flow of money going. And that's what Chairman Ben Bernanke did with the financial crisis. He was a pro at how do depressions work, specifically deflation depressions. I hired Paul Volcker back in 1980 to protect us from hyperinflation depressions. And then they hired Ben Bernanke, realizing this thing's going the other way. Something could really implode here. And so Bernanke got hired literally in time because the great financial crisis came. What he learned was make sure you save the short-term financial system so that people can have money to work. And he said he realized that's how you put the brake on. Now, on a more frequent scale, they do this, but it not so much money, not so much money flowing out of the, like they used to say, Ben is the helicopter money guy, you know. So he just did it very extreme, just like Paul Volcker did it on the other end, very extreme. Let's have 20% interest rate. So for a normal recession, the Fed would just lower their interest rates some. And that's where we got in trouble here over the past two decades. We were so close to zero that the Fed would like lower from 2% to zero. And people would say, that's not enough. And it scared them. You know, you could be setting up for something that just doesn't work as well as it did in the past. And it didn't turn out that way. We did fine. But now at 4%, they got enough room to lower it all the way to zero if necessary. And my guess is they won't have to lower it any more than one at the most for this next recession. It's just a guess for now because it's a ways off. But they not only do that, but quite often they do the quantitative easing where they'll print money. They even also help out the banking system, make sure there's money there so business can do business. And that's right. The whole key. They just want to make sure, because if you look what happened in the 1930s, there was suddenly just no money available. So the system broke, yeah. You know? And yes, you could argue this is a bailout, and maybe, but I guess we do it once a decade, and we've done it for practically the entire history of this country, at least since the 1930s and somewhat for a few decades before that. And if you go back in the 1800s when we did not do that, well, it was quite frequently we had stock market down 70%, 30, 40% unemployment. Even the rich were unhappy. They saw a lot of their wealth going out the door. And J.P. Morgan, originally he bailed out the country from his own bank, believe it or not, the entire country. But eventually it got so big, he started pulling in some of the other bankers saying, you will do this or I will take care of you, get rid of you. And so he was a good muscle guy. I'll say that for him. But he eventually woke up that none of the bankers were going to be able to bail out such a growing country. And he often said, don't bet against the U.S. You know, he knew we had these nasty depressions and recessions, but he and his group of bankers invented the Federal Reserve. And it actually came out in the 1910s, I believe. And it was on a rocky road there for a while. The Fed didn't work that well. But since 1940s to date, I realize there's a lot of people out there anti-Fed, but really it's done a good job of saving us ourselves from 70 to 90% down the stock market, 30% unemployment. It really has worked. But you can argue we've printed a lot of money along the way there too. And yep. I fully get that. That's kind of scary when you look at that. But I must say that is one thing I'm unwilling to predict ever since I've been, I think, about 16 years old when my dad and all his business buddies used to come around and have little meetings, and they would get nervous saying, oh, we're all going to wind up working for big government. And they asked what I thought. And I said, no, you're going to work for big government or big business. And then I said, and then they'd be scared of the debt. And this, geez, this is back 1970s, late 60s. And I just said, I'm not so sure anybody can predict that. And by the time I really got serious about this stuff, late 80s, 90s, all the way to today, I don't think anybody can predict when we print too much that breaks this country by itself. I'm not going there. And so many have been wrong for so many decades. I'm not saying it won't happen. I look at those numbers and say, oh my gosh, you know.
Right.
But yeah. I don't see how. I think we can print a heck of a lot more and have a heck of a lot more debt. I don't want to see it. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying I'm not going to use that in my modeling to scare, because it'll scare you out of doing anything. You won't buy a business. You won't build a business. You won't invest in the stock market. And you would have been wrong for decades. And compared to the stock market, the American people would have missed out of trillions of dollars, not billions or millions, trillions of dollars over these past few decades if they worried over that. And the problem is they do worry over that when you get these people coming out, oh, it's going to crash any day now. They don't invest enough. That puts them behind in their retirement accounts. It's as simple as that. And then they can't retire, and then everybody's upset. And that's why quite a few people are in a bad mood these days.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I wish I could teach people not to listen to these people. On the other hand, some of these people are very intelligent people with excellent research. But I feel like it should be research that goes after the government itself and the Fed Reserve of how do we control that debt? How do we stop building it? You and I can't do anything about it. And we're so far in, we're not going to pay this debt off ever. You know, I did the math the other day saying, let's just take everything from the rich. It still won't really pay for it. It actually would make a lot better. But I would probably be assassinated if I could do that. But I wouldn't mind trying it, taking everything from the rich, pay some of that off, and let's see where we go with it. But so to me, yes, my modeling looks at what are we doing for business and economy today? What can we do over the next 10 years? And been working very well for me for having that kind of attitude.
Right on. Okay. All right, so let's jump in and talk about the dollar. So the dollar took a hit the other day, and which is good for some, bad for others. But if you take a look at what it is like for the for exports, the dollar, that's a big deal for exports. So I guess we'll talk about the dollar and then what you see happening there.
Yeah, so I was pleased. The model I was saying is supposed to go down what I call level two bottom, and it's kind of like for traders. They should sell for a month or two. And I was very convinced it was going to work. But I had this kind of sad feeling in that I thought the dollar might only come down a little bit. And I'm kind of getting bored with the dollar. The model's been bored with the dollar for some time, actually, especially on the grains, where I learned from commercials watching these export prices around the world. I just said, you know, dollar isn't as important as everybody thinks when they're trading the grains day in, day out. But lately, my grain model's been a little more sensitive to it. And I got to thinking, and I think that's the same it is for manufacturing goods that we can sell and ship out of this country. And I said, you know, we do need a break. That's kind of like the next stage here to help some of this economic growth. And I'm a firm believer that a lower dollar doesn't hurt the foreigners like we're taught in textbooks. And that's, I think, been proven the last two decades. And there's more economists than ever saying that. And the stock market actually likes a lower dollar. And so this week, all of a sudden, the dollar takes a nosedive, mostly yesterday, I believe, or day before, and suddenly the stock market rallies. So I think the stock market rallied, yes, on what Powell said, but also because they were looking at the dollar. Interest rates were off some too, but the dollar came down much faster than the interest rates coming down. So the dollar, I think, and the currency trade people are a very complex group, and they try to look at anything and everything. And some of their things I don't think make a lot of sense, but they make it happen because there's some big players in there. They, I think they're leaning towards the fact that we're okay with this inflation and it's okay to lower interest rates, but the rest of the world's now catching up too. They're going to lower interest rates. They're winning on the inflation side. And so I think they're starting to work at more of the dollar and its relationship to other countries, which is really what it should be anyways, but. Granted, your currency also has to keep an eye on your interest rates. So I think the dollar has given us a message. It's kind of calm here, or feels more confident. The world isn't going to blow up or anything. Now, granted, some people would say a lower dollar occurs from high inflation. Well, not if you have higher interest rates. So I think this is really the dollar giving up on inflation stuff and a little less the interest and just looking at other opportunities. I think it likes the idea commodities could do a little better without picking up inflation. I think it likes the idea that this global economy can pick up its pace, that the U.S. is already the big leader. I mean, we're so far ahead of the rest of the world for our economic growth. I mean, we really have to be proud of that. So this lower dollar this time around in the grains is going to be interesting. It may help us. I don't want to get people excited saying the commodities are suddenly going to shoot up here just because of the lower dollar, because exports are going to shoot up. There's other economic issues going on here, but it is an ingredient for the long term that looking out in like next year, we can see the commodity business picking up a little better and our exports picking up a little better. But it may take some time, but I really like what occurred in the dollar, and I like to see it. It was so boring here, 5-7 weeks here past, and now breaking loose here. And I don't think it's coming down by huge amounts, but this time around, I don't think we need that to help us in our economy and our exports.
Okay. There is, I've had this conversation with plenty of people. When you start looking at the grain, it's hard for someone to point to one reason why the price of grain has done what it's done. You and I were having a conversation before we started recording about kind of what you thought was causing the grain market to do what it's doing. And, I'd love to hear that again, just so you could kind of go over that, what you think was driving the grain market down.
Yeah, I think in recent weeks, in fact, I'll just say for this year, I do think it's more the funds than anything. And I think last year they started to take a chance of a seasonal bottom in October. They were considering a chance it could work higher in the summer, even though we had high ending stocks. I think they felt like it could pick up some. But by December and in the start of January, when they saw the markets rolling down, they said that's not a good seasonal thing, and I warned my subscribers of that it's not. I said, we're going to be slugging through some mud probably before we can see it bounce by summer. It might take us a while to get there. But I think they became really determined that all these commodities were going lower for quite some time, and I even have cycles that are actually in bearish commodities into next year even, but there's a little lesser important long-term cycle that allows for a nice bounce into summer before another down move. So I said, I don't want to bet down into next year. That's not how I trade commodities. I got to bet, in the next few months and so forth. So I'm willing to bet on that upside in the summer, but I don't want to become overly bullish, too greedy, because the economics are changing. We're rebalancing. So I think these funds picked up on that, decided there's more rebalancing coming. We're going to build these supplies. They started selling. But I think somewhere in there in January, February, on into now, they evolved from trying to time and pick tops and bottoms to just an attitude of this is developing into an easy downtrend and let's sell near the 5-day average. Funds are kind of famous for that in terms of my opinion, but I'm not the only one on that. If it did go above the 5-day average, they would sell near the 5-week average. And so it was turning as simple as that. And I think they just said, we'll just keep selling little bounces like that. And just keep doing it forever if we can get away with it, because the path of least resistance here, nobody seems to want to fight us on this. And I think they were just saying, do it until somebody slaps us side to head, and then we know we got a bottom. And so far, nobody stepped up. Now, why didn't nobody else step up? Because to me, economic-wise, fundamentally, these prices are cheap now. They weren't last summer, no question about it. But they were low enough even last fall. Why suddenly just the blood-curdling knock it down? Well, I do think the commercials were in a setup. Yes, China still buys a lot from everyone, but they don't work it as hard as they used to. They have their own economic issues there. They're also, since the trade war Trump launched, they've been obviously favoring Brazil more than us, but they still buy from us, okay? But you could see that it's kind of like old news of what they're buying. There wasn't the excitement there. And I think the commercials felt like we're not going to load up and have piles of grain all over the place just because we think there's huge demand coming, because we really don't know whether it's coming or not. And they became complacent. And when they saw those lower prices, I think they just simply said, we'll build a bit a little more to try to make sure we get a higher price. But next week we will lower to be in line with the futures. So suddenly the commercials just following the futures market, but that's helping to also lower the futures market. So the fund then becomes even more excited. So it was a feedback loop. But I think if you must blame anyone, which may not always be the thing we should be doing in markets, I would say it was the funds. And if you look at them, they're record large or nearly record large in these markets of betting on the downside. Historic. I mean, they put a lot of money into this. And it's not making sense now, but I really think they're saying maybe nobody can pick the bottom. So, you know, hey, let's just keep riding until something goes wrong. Now, this week we did see some price action I like for a bottom, but it's just starting. It's like a child learning to walk after this beating, you know? And are we going to get enough news? And it'll be very interesting to see how the market behaves into the planting contingent support and quarterly stocks at the end of the month. Does that change your attitudes? I mean, my gut feeling, yes, this market deserves a rebound into summer. I don't care if there's no crop or if there is one. It deserves a rebound on its own. It may not be a large one because we do have some work to do. I mean, China, you know, is holding back commodities to a certain extent compared to what we're used to. But they're still eating, even with their soft economy. They're eating just as much as they ever did. So I think we're, you know, hopefully we're getting to the point where these funds are going to start changing their attitude. And it'll be very interesting to see the remainder of this month with the lower dollar. Will that also change their mind saying, hey, we haven't seen that in a while. What does that mean now? You know, we need to get them out of that rut. What they are is what people call a trend follower. And the old-fashioned trend following that worked so great in the 1970s with inflation is you use these slow things, sometimes just a moving average. It was literally that simple for some big people that could manage millions of dollars back then. And what it is, you just wait for the market to go below it and say, okay, I'm out. And what they learned with that inflation is some of these commodities would go up for 10 months nonstop, and they were lucky enough, the average stayed lower, following it higher, and they rode it and made a fortune, and more than once during the 1970s, even into the early 1980s. And they learned this even in the 1950s, 1960s, but the 70s was a big payoff for some of them. Today, trend following can be a little too slow for some people, and yeah, there's people have versions of it's a little more fast or aggressive. But I think that's mentality. The funds, they turn into a trend follower. And trend follower is nothing more than saying you wait for the market to go down some. And if it hits a certain percent, if you can't find any evidence that it made a mistake, sell it. So they wait for someone else to sell first. And then some of them these days become more aggressive that they don't sell in one slug. They make multiple sales all the way down. And that's where some of the simple chart reading picks up with these 5-day and 5-week averages. You could see it bounced to it, bam, put it down. Well, somebody sold some more. And it just maintained that trend. And right today, we really haven't broken that downtrend, but we're kind of working on it. I'm a little bit encouraged here that maybe the attitude's going to change. But I mean, it's kind of scary. You're saying, okay, so it's really just a group of speculators that held this grain market hostage here in recent weeks. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, they have a lot of money, and these days we do have to measure that kind of thing. There's too much money in too few hands. I can definitely see it in the Wall Street, how they can just slam things in a matter of minutes, the entire market. Okay. Fortunately, they haven't destroyed the overall business cycles that are still working, believe it or not, for 100 and some years. The behavior is a little bit different and things move a little bit faster. But in the end, the good old supply demand economics are still working in our markets, but we just do it a little bit differently and we get a little more emotional than what we used to. Hopefully that explains that a bit. To me, this is just trend following. It's got a burnout and eventually some timers as well as trend followers in the other direction. Like if we can see this market up, over a period of 4 weeks or something like that, I'm guessing the trend follow will be over and done. And the closer we get to summer, those funds are intelligent enough to say, we ought to play for a weather scare. And we made a lot of money on this, but maybe we ought to make some more on the upside instead of the downside, you know. So it's coming.
Good. Okay. So basically what you're saying, there's some light at the end of the tunnel here.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about oil a little bit. Heading into the summer driving season, gasoline and diesel and those kind of things are all going to be making their seasonal moves up. And we go from there. But oil just not doing anything, right? It's not going up. It's not going down. It's just not even going sideways. It's just going there, right? I guess. What are your thoughts on oil as you take a look at what's going on there?
Yeah, it's a good way to put it because on one hand, you look at it and it has moved up some, but it's been one heck of a struggle. It's kind of a sleepy person trying to climb a hill here. I think it is production related. This does make sense to me. I don't believe with this high production, oil has a reason to go down quite a bit. Okay. But at the same time, that could be a headwind, whereas I'm thinking that's thinking is outdated now in the grains. We need to be careful of that, that there is more upside in the grains. The oil may wake up more than I'm thinking right now, but I do see some upside going to summer in sympathy with gasoline. Gasoline could be the stronger one than crude oil normally. Sometimes they take turns. But at the same time, I've always felt like the highest price in the futures is probably over and done with by Memorial Day, even though we're just starting the driving season. And the pump price can still go up a little more basis-wise during the driving season. But they'll normally get the futures up to where they don't have to raise it in the summer so they don't cause problems and turn it into some political thing. I really do think they think this way. If not, there's a lot of coincidence there because it's how I would do it. But I think it is going to be a struggle because I don't think that production is going away in the next 6 months. Now, I will say the government did say something interesting for next year, and I think they were implying late next year that we may not raise production enough fast enough further out that, yes, things can back off on its supply and it could support better prices next year. And as I look at my studies in oil, I'm fine with that, but I'm not fine with a major up move this year. I just don't believe it. And even if we got one, I think our economy and stock market so strong that higher gas prices aren't going to hurt us. I mean, you have to slam oil up to $100 right now to scare people enough that they get nervous of what else are they buying and selling and how are they doing business. So I think it's a struggle going nowheres, and I'm sure OPEC wants more money, but they're having a difficult time doing it. The best they can do is keep it from dropping, and they're very, very serious about keeping it from dropping. I think they can win on that one. I don't think they can win on driving this higher, and it's just because the U.S. is we're a big producer. We've changed things in the last few decades compared to 50 years ago. So we're pumping the oil out there, and that's helping our business-wise because we're exporting some, but we also got more to use so we don't have to import. And believe it or not, we still import even though we're exporting. No, that doesn't make sense to me personally, but that's how free market economies work. So anyways, yeah, I can't be too bullish here on oil even though I think there's a chance to work.
I know. Okay. Rich, good stuff as usual. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing over at what you got going on there, yep. Podcast-wise and everything else. What's the best way for them to do that?
Pod.com. And there is a link there. You might want to click the buy link. That seems to do a better job getting people to. I use a separate company to actually host the podcast. Now, if you want to go directly to the podcast, you can go to CriticalPointPod.com. Bean.com. It's actually critical. And that's all you'll see is just a list of free and locked up subscriber video audios. But check out that home site too. Critical tells a little more about myself. I do put some free stuff up there, and I just added another list of the free videos over under the blog site, make it a little easier to get to that kind of stuff.
They find you at Twitter. It's Rich_Hassan on X or whatever it's called now.
Yep.
Check it out there and you can go see that stuff there. So Rich, appreciate you being on the podcast, man. We'll catch you again next month.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. You find the YouTube channel, which is the video version of this, over at the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. You can also find us on TikTok and Snapchat at Moving Iron Podcast as well. Moving Iron Podcast, LLC.com. It's a brand new website, Rich. All the things you could possibly want to know about Moving Iron is all right there for you to check out. And the information from Moving Iron Summit will be up there shortly. Rich Possum will be there giving his speech about what's going on in the breakout session. So check that out. Looking forward to that. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Rich Possum. Smooth smart, folks. Out. One more thing, too. I'm going to go back and re-edit this out. You can go to successfulfarmingagriculture.com, and you can see some articles and some podcasts I do there as well. So check that out, and that'll be a good supplement, I guess, to the Moving Iron Podcast. So check that out. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Rich Possum. It's going to be some iron, folks. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.